Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter. Purdue moves on to game two against Vanderbilt after falling late on a Friday night in week one at Nevada. I'm Kyle Charters, Tom Deanhart here, Brian Uberbein in just a couple of minutes for Gold and Black Radio as we start to look ahead toward the Commodores, the home opener on Saturday, plus take a look back at the shocking, surprising at the very least, collapse late in the game by the Boilermakers on Friday against the Wolfpack. All right, Tom, a lot of things that went wrong for Purdue late in that contest. If there was one of them that you would earmark to fix first, what would it be?
Well, I think, you know, on the offensive line, they have to do a better job finding a way to generate a running game, Kyle. I mean, you have a lead late. You need to be able to burn the clock, keep it away from Nevada, move the chains, and, you know, Purdue kicks just a field goal in the second half and scores one other touchdown. The game's over. They scored 7 points in the entirety of the second half, Kyle. And that one touchdown was sort of a gadget play where Sindelar handed off to King Giroux, pitched it back to Sindelar, who found a wide-open streaking David Bell for a 49-yard touchdown. So, again, I know the defense had its issues late in the game, but I think they were gassed. To me, Kyle, number one, got to get that offensive line past to figure out a way to generate a push and get a consistent rushing game.
Yeah, I thought it was very telling, Tom. In the second half, when Purdue needed rushing yardage, it thought that its best rushing play was to spread everybody out, put the quarterback in shotgun, and have him run the quarterback draw. That was Purdue's best running play, and it chose to use that play over any other options to try to milk the clock a little bit in the second half. I thought that was pretty telling about what Purdue thinks of its running game and what it thinks of its offensive line.
Hey, you're exactly right. Sindelar was the second leading rusher for Purdue. This is a 6'4", 225-pound quarterback who had knee surgery after the 2017 season. Not the most mobile guy. I agree, a little vexing that, you know, called running plays for a quarterback of Sindelar's ilk seemed a little dubious. So we'll see what the counterpunch is for Purdue. It doesn't get any easier from here, Kyle. You know that, and SEC opponents coming into Ross-Ade Stadium, Vanderbilt. The to-do list for Purdue this week is a long one.
Is it just as simple to, though, Tom, as just caring for possessions? There were back-to-back possessions in the second quarter, which I felt like Purdue just sort of gave away. I mean, it ends up with two guys on the field with the same number for the punt return, loses about 25 yards of field position, ends up giving that possession away because it can't get off its own goal line, has another there with a turnover, 5 turnovers in all. I mean, Purdue probably wins that game if it just cares for its possessions a little bit better. So that seems to be, I want to say, a simple fix, but one that can be accomplished in relative short order, it would seem.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the punt return muffs are on Purdue, obviously. Nevada really didn't do anything to generate those. First one, of course, hitting Horvath in the head. And the second one, inexplicably, of course, Rondale Moore trying to pick up a rolling punt. Bad idea, right? Certainly was. And, of course, Nevada recovered. So you're right. You turn the ball over 5 times, you're not going to win many games, obviously. And conversely, Purdue generated 0 turnovers. So, again, last year, Kyle, for the year, Purdue was -5 in turnover margin. Here we go again. You know, it's no mystery, no big revelation that teams, again, that turn the ball over have a tough chance to win. So, Purdue, like I said, has a lot of things to clean up here moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know what the percentages say at -5, but it's got to be in the low single digits for winning football games, right? -5 turnovers?
Yeah.
2% maybe?
Yeah. I mean, maybe need to see that stat or somebody's got it out there. So the special teams, before, I think the very first punt return of the game, Kyle, Rondale Moore bobbled it. So that was sort of a foreshadowing maybe of things to come in the punt return game all night. So, again, that was an issue. We talked about the offense, the decision-making by Elijah Sindler, the offensive line. In the second half, Rondale Moore had three catches for 10 yards total. Those all came in the fourth quarter. So, again, you have to credit Nevada, right? They made plays, and when Purdue had a chance to get off the field late in that game, 4th and 7 at one point late in the fourth quarter, nobody can make a play. Nobody can bat down a pass, force a bad pass, or sack the quarterback just to get Purdue's defense off the field and to seal that game.
Yeah. It's one of those games where you can look at any number of, like, 5 or 6 plays and wonder what could have been. You know, Jared Sparks dropping the pass when Purdue's trying to milk the clock away there late, that 4th and 7, as you mentioned, you know, the touchdown versus interception versus incomplete pass in the end zone late, any one of those things maybe goes a different direction. But a game in which, you know, Purdue had, and it shouldn't really have come down to one of those, you know, singular plays late in the contest. You talked about the defense a little bit. I was disappointed that it wasn't able to get that stop nor get a turnover in this game. But I think if you look at overall, you know, take into consideration that it seemed to wear down late because the offense couldn't stay on the field, I think it was a pretty good debut for this defense and one that, you know, Purdue can build on going into next week.
Yeah, I thought maybe it could be a little more aggressive in the fourth quarter. I get where you want to, you know, be a little cautious when you have that lead. But again, they need some big plays, Kyle. They had one sack and I think 6 tackles for loss. And like I said, no turnovers generated. But again, by and large, if you look at the numbers, they don't look bad. So you're right. You wonder, don't you, was there any impact by having Nick Holt in the press box as opposed to being on the field? We'll see if that continues next week. It's going to be interesting to talk to Coach Brohm about that in particular. So you're right. The defense, like I said, for 3 quarters played well and kept getting thrown back out there by the offense because of turnovers. And Kyle, do you think the altitude had anything to do with maybe Purdue's defense getting a little gassed?
Yeah, it could have, especially late in the game, I think. I mean, it was out there for a long time, through the middle of the third quarter, through the fourth quarter. And, you know, just being out there that long, I think, is one thing. Being out there that long and the oxygen content not being quite the same as what you used to probably, you know, was not a great combination for Purdue. What did you think about Sindelar?
Yeah, you know, I think the first half he looked like an All-American, didn't he? A couple beautiful throws, the one to Jackson Anthrop, and then the touchdown pass to Rondale Moore, spot on. You know, we all know what he's capable of. We've seen enough of Elijah Sindelar to understand his skill set. He can throw the football, big, strong guy. But like most quarterbacks, you know, when you get pressure, when you're feeling pressure, you get discombobulated, you get out of your comfort zone, and sometimes you can throw off your back foot, and that's exactly what Elijah Sindelar did a few times when he felt the pressure. I think you could sense some frustration. I could in Jeff Brohm's voice in the postgame talking to him in the aftermath of maybe standing stronger in the pocket, standing and delivering. Sometimes you're going to have to take a hit to deliver a pass, you know. You got to be tough. And I think that's something that, you know, we saw from Sindelar last year, made some poor decisions under duress that can lead to turnovers. And sure enough, we saw some of that in the second half against Nevada. It's unfortunate. Again, Sindelar, he's a talented guy, but he has to be a little bit stronger, stand a little taller in the pocket, maybe wait a little bit longer, let those guys come open and take a hit if he has to take a hit to deliver a pass.
All right, Vanderbilt is next. The home opener, noon on Saturday. Commodores lose over the weekend to Georgia. And Purdue, Tom, is a 10-point favorite in this game, which was a couple more points than what I anticipated. What do you think about this matchup Saturday?
Obviously, Vanderbilt's an SEC team, more talent, more athletic ability across the board. How much can you take from losing to Georgia at home by Vandy? I don't think much. We all know how good Georgia is, right? Great rushing game. Vanderbilt obviously had their struggles offensively. Couldn't throw the ball downfield. Their quarterback's a Ball State transfer. Again, there's some quarterback controversy in Nashville coming up to West Lafayette. We'll see how that sorts out this week. Good running back in Keyshawn Vaughn, the former Illini back that Purdue recruited under Darryl Hazel. But again, he couldn't get on track either. the Vandy offensive line really is struggling right now. So, you know, it's a beatable team, but just like Purdue, Kyle Vanderbilt's going to come up there with a big sense of urgency, too, and knowing, hey, we're 0-1, and here's an opportunity for us to get on the plus side.
Yeah. Should be an interesting week, Tom. I'll look forward to your reports at goldblack.com, see if Jeff Brohm makes any personnel changes this week or what the game plan is to try and make some of the corrections coming off that loss at Nevada. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll bring in Brian Huber, get his perspective on the loss on Friday and look ahead to the home opener Saturday. We'll do that here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill. Industrial and classic, the restaurant is built like a steakhouse that handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish, and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer-inspired cocktails and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or special events in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
If you're looking to list or buy a home in Greater Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, or the surrounding counties, give me a call at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com. Part of the Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, we can offer a specialized marketing plan with photos, video tours, and more to help you sell your house while getting you in your next dream home. Contact me at kyle@chartersteam.com. Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. And Kyle here with Brian. We were talking a little bit about the Boilermaker football team coming off the loss Friday, looking ahead to Saturday's home opener against Vanderbilt. I guess the good thing is, Brian, we're almost closer to Saturday's game than we are from last Friday's game. So perhaps a chance to move on here a little bit. Are we asking too much in terms of Purdue being the consistent program that many want it to be right now, considering the youth that the Boilermakers put on the field on Friday night?
That depends on your perspective. I mean, you know, Purdue was good enough to beat Nevada. Purdue should have beaten Nevada. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that game to be won, but I think it also is worth noting that, you know, sometimes you take a step back and you realize, well, the team you pay attention to, you think can be pretty good. It's not like this is a team that's in the top 25. It's not like this is a team that is expected outside of those who are partial to its success, its stakeholders, so to speak. This is not expected to be one of the, you know, best teams in college football. This is not a team that is in a place where you proverbially, I don't know if that's a word, roll the ball out there and they beat people. Obviously, you know, Purdue was good enough to win that game on Friday night, should have won that game on Friday night, did not win that game on Friday night. But I don't think that was a game everyone should have taken for granted. I think we all expected Purdue to win. As it turned out, you know, Purdue had a chance to win, probably should have won, definitely should have won. Probably did win when they got that interception in the fourth quarter. But that's an entirely different topic. to your question, I don't think Purdue's in a place right now where they can just roll over everyone and everyone can just assume Purdue is – success is Purdue's birthright here this season. I think this team is going to be a bit of a work in progress. I think there is a real chance they get better because they do have a lot of youth out there. You hope the offensive front improves with experience. You hope everybody just gets a little bit more comfortable. I do think this was just kind of version 1.0 of Purdue and the final version of this team, or the version you see as early as this weekend might be considerably better.
Yeah. You think Ron makes any personnel changes in the two deep this week? Does he, you know, go with the younger receivers and bigger roles? Does he make any changes on that offensive line? I'm not sure what changes there could be to make there on that offensive line, but I mean, is there anything that you would change up that you could foresee him maybe doing differently?
I don't really see any personnel changes. I think the place where you would have maybe liked to have played more guys was up front, because, you know, the really up-tempo, quick-hitting offense in the first half was effective. I don't know if you can necessarily be as effective late in a game doing that when you have the same five offensive linemen playing all 82 snaps at 4,500 feet above sea level. But if you don't have more than five guys you feel comfortable in playing, you can't do that. So obviously it's an acute issue for Purdue here to keep Elijah Sindelar comfortable in the pocket. And if those are the best five guys you feel like you have to do it, and that is that pressing a need, it's hard to say you need to play more offensive linemen so that you can perhaps do what you do best offensively a little bit more through the course of the game. Other than that, I don't really know. I thought the defense was good enough to win. I clearly the defense wore down at the end. I think, you know, Purdue needed to help the defense with its offense, and Purdue needed to help its defense by not turning the ball over, but also just, you know, staying on the field and capitalizing on its opportunities. Something I think that got lost in all of this too was Purdue dropped the pass in the first half that would have been first down inside the 20. It later fumbled that in a situation that would have been first down inside the 40. You figure you get at least 3 to 7 at worst points out of those two possessions, and you have all of a sudden put up damn near 40 points on the road and you've won that game. But obviously that's football. Both elements of the game are obviously connected. Purdue just needed to help its defense a little bit more, keep them off the field. Was not able to do that, and I don't know if it's a personnel issue as much as it is just a circumstances of the game issue.
There's nothing worse, right, as a defense than forcing the punt and then having the punt muffed and being back on the field. And Purdue not only did it once, they did it twice.
Twice, yeah, yeah. Yes. And Purdue really wants to make big plays in the kicking game this year. They've been very outspoken about that, and as it turned out, they made big plays for the other team. What the breakdown was on the ball that hit off Xander Horvath's head, I don't know. I wasn't on the field, obviously. I wasn't even at the game. But, you know, Rondell Moore's got to call that out and say, everybody get away from the ball kind of thing. I don't know if that was happening or not. Obviously, on the other one, you know, I think Rondell Moore got caught perhaps being a little bit too aggressive. I think if he had that one back, obviously he would have let that ball roll. But Purdue has to not turn the ball over in the kicking game, because those were not only huge momentum swings for the home team, but they also left Purdue's defense on the field more than it needed to be. And that obviously really, really mattered at the end.
Purely speculating on the second Rondell Moore one, I think that a coach probably talked to him about picking the rolling ball up because he had let one go earlier in the game that ended up getting down to the 1 yard line. That he let go by him, that probably would have been an easier one for him to jump on top of. I'm guessing that when he let that one go by, a coach told him, go ahead and try to pick that ball up, and then he did, and it led to a second turnover. That's purely me guessing, but it sort of stands to reason a little bit. What do you think about Nick Holt being in the press box rather than down on the field? Do you care one way or the other?
Well, Nick Holt was on the sideline last year, and how many close games did Purdue have there to be won where the defense couldn't get that stop? I think that's just something that's easy to look at and say, this is different, so this happened, so that must have something to do with it. I can't possibly imagine what that would have had to do with the outcome of the game. I think, you know, Purdue played it the same way in the second half that they did a lot of the time last year. They had the three-man rush going, And the three-man rush wasn't the problem. The three-man rush was getting pressure. George Karloftis, Branson Dean, and Derek Barnes were doing a really good job in that three-man rush, getting some pressure, moving the pocket, making the quarterback move. The problem was when the quarterback moved, he stepped up in the pocket. He either ran with pretty much no one there to account for him, or he was able to step into throws into the middle of Purdue's zone. There was nobody there accounting for the escape hatch, it seemed like. So it wasn't the three-man rush that got Purdue as much as it was the eight-man drop, so to speak. So I don't know what Purdue necessarily could have done differently defensively other than to find that balance between playing it safe with time and score on its side and being as aggressive as you'd like to be. But I think there really wasn't a whole lot of accounting there for the second, third levels of the defense, so to speak. But what Holt not being on the sideline had to do with it, I can't even venture a guess what that might have had to do with it. I would not anticipate that this being a change, because I can't imagine a head coach making a change like that and then just saying after 1 week, to hell with it, we're just gonna scrap it. Obviously, it sounded last week like this was Jeff Brohm's call, not Nick Holt's call. I don't know what all went into it. I don't know if we'll ever know what all went into it, but I don't see what that could have had to do with anything.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Brian.
Yep. Thanks.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back with a wrap on this podcast. We'll do that here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brohm squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights, and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there, too, with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
More on the site at goldenblack.com leading into the game Saturday against Vanderbilt. Be sure to check that out. Should be an interesting week, to say the least. All right, that'll do it for our podcast for this week. A reminder that we'll be back on 11 o'clock on Friday. We'll drop the pregame podcast for Purdue Vanderbilt. Now, thanks to our sponsors, Easton Grill, First Source Bank, Charter Steam, Remax Ability Plus, Follett's, 6th Street Dive, Purdue Federal Credit Union. For Tom Deanhart and Brian Dubert, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.